Certainly. Cathedral City?
Here.
Palm Desert?
Here.
Palm Springs.
Present.
And we have a quorum.
Excellent. Welcome again, everybody. So at this time, this is the point for public comments. This is the time for any members of the public to address the committee. And each member who wishes to, of the public that wishes to address us has 3 minutes. It's my understanding that we have no one in the queue at this point.
That is correct. We don't have any public comments.
If there's anyone who would like to speak, either just hit star 9 or raise your hand.
And Mr. Chair, just as a reminder to those who are participating, the screen shows the Q&A function, although that is not functional this afternoon. So we do ask that anybody who wants a question raises their hand, and we don't have anybody raising their hand right now.
Okay, then let us proceed to board member comments. So board members, any comments?
I have none.
No comments from the board, neither do I. From staff, do we have comments from Katie? Do you have any comments for us?
Mr. Chair, I wanted to let the board members know that as part of our participation as a load serving entity, we do receive the notices that your cities are also receiving about the challenges the state is facing with the current heat wave. And those notices do come to DCE as a community choice agency. We also are putting notices out on our social media to remind folks about the opportunities and the need for everyone to take action and limit their energy use. And I just briefly wanted to summarize, I think you're all aware of these reminders, but we're asking everyone to do this so that we can make it through the next few days of the heat wave. Setting your thermostat at 78 degrees, only running appliances in the very early morning or after 10 p.m. or not at all if you can avoid it. Turning off unnecessary lights, unplugging electrical devices, closing your blinds and drapes, limiting time that your refrigerator, which is one of your major energy users, is open, that the door is open. They're even asking that you limit your charging of electric vehicles to morning hours, and setting your pool pumps also to run during those time periods. And this is obviously a statewide issue that's affecting everyone. The Public California Independent System Operator has issued a statewide flex alert, which goes from today, from actually yesterday through Wednesday. And it's recommended that those who can should continue those energy saving practices even into Thursday. And we hope the heat breaks and we can all take a little bit of a deep breath. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Katie, for those important reminders during this time, particularly for our more vulnerable populations. I appreciate that. All right, let's move on then to the consent calendar. We have on the consent calendar for today the minutes of July 20th. Are there any questions, comments? And if not, do I hear a motion?
Move approval.
Lisa?
Yeah, I will second, but then I should abstain since I was not present at the meeting.
Understood. So can we have a roll call vote, please, on the consent calendar?
Certainly. Cathedral City?
Yes.
Palm Desert?
I would say yes, and I think my alternate attended, but our legal counsel said voting on minutes, you don't need to be present, which is probably different than some legal counsel say. So okay. Seeing as it would be problematic if we only had a vote of one, I'm going to say yes.
Okay. And then Palm Springs.
I will abstain since I don't know what my legal counsel has said.
Okay. That's right. They're dueling legal counsel. All right. Thank you.
Passes.
Thank you. The minutes are approved. All right. Let's then move on to our discussion and action items. Item A, which is our big gorilla for today. It's our integrated resource plan. And we have a couple of presenters. So Katie, would you like to kick us off?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to give a brief introduction before Jacqueline Haar from the Energy Authority introduces you to our integrated resource plan. I do want to appreciate, as it happens, the scheduling for this to be submitted to the Public Utilities Commission is September 1st. So we do really appreciate all of you being available in August, our usual month of evacuating the desert, to be here so that we can share this plan with you and get your endorsement. This is kind of an impressive effort that we are looking at statewide to basically identify how we're doing with our greenhouse gas emissions and renewable energy efforts, as well as ensuring reliability. And today's probably about the best day we could think of to be discussing about this topic, given the situation with the Flex Alert. I do want to let you know that there are a few minor changes that we anticipate needing to make to the report compared to the one that was presented in your agenda, and the recommendation allows for that. We did receive some data from the Public Utilities Commission on Friday, which will be incorporated. These are minor, just sort of data updates that we've been waiting for that information to appear. So I wanted you to be aware of that. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to Jacqueline. She's going to give you an overview, a high level. This is a fairly technical document, so we're going to try to address it at the level that all of the rest of us can better appreciate what we're doing with this integrated resource plan. Jacqueline.
Hi, can everyone hear me?
Yes.
All right. I will start sharing my screen.
Jacqueline, before you begin, can I just I'll just remind our directors that if folks have questions at all during the presentation, to feel free to stop you. It might be more effective if there are questions on the material as it's being presented rather than perhaps to wait. So you have the option, board members of either. Please proceed.
All right. Yes, so as Katie mentioned, we're going to be discussing the integrated resource plan. So I'll just jump into it. We'll be discussing sort of why we do IRPs, what the purpose are they are at the state level, and then DCE specific IRP and how that fits in. And if I use any acronyms, please stop me. It's a bad habit of us in the energy industry to use acronyms, particularly in the IRP process. Good. So starting off with just, why do we do integrated resource plans here in California, as well as broadly, this is a thing that is called different things across the country and across the world, but pretty much every utility does something along the lines of an integrated resource plan at a regular interval. So integrated resource plans are meant to ensure that you have the right number of resources on the grid to meet the grid's needs, as well as any goals of the energy sector overall. Here in California, with the passage of our number of different clean energy bills, our main focus is reducing greenhouse gas emissions in the electricity sector. And coupled with that is the overarching goal of all electric grids to maintain system reliability throughout the planning horizon. Integrated resource plans can go out a number of years in the future. The current resource plan that we're looking at today goes out 10 years. So it goes from 2020 to 2030, so a 10-year planning horizon. The planning horizon is meant to capture the need to plan for what resources you want on the grid, as well as to potentially build them and get them integrated and online and operational in time for that need. So while the planning horizon is 2020 to 2030, the sort of goal that we're looking at really is ensuring that we're set up well to meet what we're going to need in 2030. So the graphic that you see here walks through the way that integrated resource planning process happens here in California. And as you can see, it's a circular chart that continues. That's because when one IRP cycle ends, then the other one has already begun. And it repeats right now in a 2-year cycle in California. That may change to a 3-year cycle, may stick with a 2-year cycle. We're still discussing it on the policy level. So the way it starts is up here in the upper left with updates to modeling inputs. So this would be things like updating your assumptions regarding how much it costs to build different technology types, as well as updating how you view the grid and what sort of transmission is on the grid, just sort of an overall update of all of the assumptions that go into planning the electric grid as it stands today and how you may change it in the future. The CPUC then takes those updated modeling inputs and puts them into their system modeling tools. These tools are also updated on a regular basis as the IRP cycle goes through. The modeling that the CPUC does at a system state level then determines the reference system portfolio, or in the case of this particular year, IRP two system portfolios. So these are the portfolios that the CPUC views as the goals of where they see the state should be by 2030. They release that information as well as all of the modeling inputs that they use to build the reference system portfolio, and then ask each LSC to model their own specific portfolio that shows their fair share of helping to meet the state goals. So the state goals of reducing GHG emissions as well as maintaining reliability on the grid. Each LSC has some independence in how they model this, and there are some rules that they must follow per the CPUC mandate. Once each LSC has assembled its portfolio, which is the stage that we're currently in right now, they send it to the CPUC, and the CPUC aggregates all of those LSC portfolios and compares them to their reference system portfolio to come up with a CPUC preferred system portfolio. So that's taking into account, you know, the state goals for 2030, as well as each LSE's independent goals for their own particular portfolio to develop a statewide system portfolio, or two portfolios in this case. Those system preferred system portfolios are then sort of released into the public, and that is what drives all of the rest of California's planning for at least the next 2 years. And then, you know, while that's going on, people are already getting ready for the 2022 or the 2023 IRP process. So, you know, it's a sort of a lumbering beast, but it gets us to, you know, the goals, or at least it hopefully gets us to the goals of maintaining system reliability while keeping the GHG emissions in California decreasing. Moving on to the next slide. You know, as I mentioned, one of California's main goals with its IRP cycle and in future IRP cycles is to meet our California emission goals for the electric sector. The chart here shows the emissions of the electric sector starting in 2000. And as you can see, we've been on a downward trend as we have reduced the GHG emitting power plants, you know, taking off the most challenging ones for the grid, the ones that emit the most GHG, and, you know, slowly retiring those natural gas facilities. And as you can see on the far right of the chart, you know, the goal by 2045 is to get to zero emissions of carbon or equivalent CO2. So right now we're in 2020, just above 60 MMT of CO2 equivalent. And as I said, the current IRP process is looking at 2020 to 2030. And for the 2030 goal, the CPUC has stated that they want to have two different portfolios. The first portfolio is the 46 MMT portfolio. So that's, I would say, the benchmark for where the regulators and the state as a whole wants the state to be at 2030. Additionally, they have sort of a stretch goal of 38 MMT, so reducing the million metric tons of CO2 put out by the electricity sector by an additional 8 million metric tons down. And this would just put us on a better path to achieving that 2045 goal of zero. So, yeah, do more work now, less work in the future. So the IRP that DCE, as well as all the other LSEs modeled, is showing those two different reference cases, the 46 and the 38. And that was a mandated requirement. Moving on to the next slide, just digging in a little bit more into those two portfolios. So as I said, statewide, we have two goals. One is, you know, meeting the benchmark goal of 46 MMT of emissions. And then the stretch goal of 38 MMT. For the 46 portfolio, if you want to break it down further, if you look at all of SCE's service territory and all load serving entities within that service territory, that has about a 13 million metric ton share of that 46. And then DCE's portion is much smaller than that, as you might expect, coming down to 0.087 million metric tons. So you know, just the share of where DCE would be if it was meeting exactly its amount of the 46 million metric tons based on the amount of load DCE has compared to the rest of the state. For the 38, and so when we modeled the 46 portfolio, the DCE was required per the CPUC mandate to exactly hit that target of 0.087 million metric tons. For the 38 million metric ton portfolio at the state level, all LSEs were required to either meet their sliver of the, or their share of the emissions from the state, or they could go below it. So DCE's portion or share of the emissions for the state based on the 38 million metric ton goal would be 0.069 million metric tons. And so we could either hit that or we could come in below. And as you see on future slides, for that portfolio, we chose, given DCE's very strong green energy goals, to come in below the 0.069 goal. Any questions thus far? All right. Moving on to the next slide. So this slide breaks down how we modeled those two different portfolios that we were required to model. Both portfolios include the planned procurement from DCE's recent long-term renewable RFO. So those are the two solar plus storage resources, as well as the two wind resources that we are currently in negotiations to procure. And those contracts would come online in the next few years and continue past 2030 into the 2030s. Both portfolios included DCE's stated preference for local development, both from the recent procurement as well as any future procurement needed to meet the total portfolios needed by 2030. For both portfolios, we assumed that any new solar development that DCE procured would include battery storage, just like how the renewable RFO had battery storage. This is due to the capacity value that battery storage shows, as well as the potential energy savings of shifting that solar generation from the middle part of the day to the evening part of the day when the grid really needs it. For each portfolio, we modeled both the customers that would be in the carbon-free product and ensured that the carbon-free customers would in fact be receiving energy only from carbon-free resources, as well as the resources that the Desert Saver customers would have and what that would look like. So for the Desert Saver customers, we assumed the renewable content in 2030 of 60%. So just, you know, just right at where the state benchmarks would need. And for the renewable mix meeting their needs with that 60% renewable content, we assumed new local geothermal. When you do the modeling for the IRP, you have to make some assumptions regarding exactly what sort of facilities will meet your portfolio needs and where they are located. Not down to, you know, the exact spot on the map, but, you know, in terms of like sort of general geographic regions and technology types, you need to tell the CPUC what the plan is. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to stick to the plan. The CPUC knows, as does everyone else, that plans change and technology types change and the economics of all these things change. So, you know, this is stating the goal of where we want to be by 2030, but it's not something that is going to hold DCE. You know, this isn't something that you're signing that, yes, we will certainly do this. This is just the general goal for DCE. For the carbon-free product, this is really where the differences between the two portfolios shine, is that for the carbon-free product, we assumed that there would be enough renewable content in the portfolio to meet the emissions benchmark under the 46 MMT portfolio, while there would be 100% renewable content to meet the 38 million metric ton portfolio. And this is due to the fact that, as I mentioned earlier, with the 46 million metric ton portfolio, DCE is required to actually produce enough emissions to meet your, you know, share of the state's emissions. So we actually had to sort of push emissions into the carbon-free product where we wouldn't otherwise want to have it, to in order to meet DCE's fair share of the emissions that the state would be putting out. For the 38 million metric ton portfolio, where we could reduce the emissions as much as we want, we chose to go 100% renewable, and all of that renewable coming only from renewable technologies that emit no carbon, so solar, wind, and small hydro, which really brings down DCE's carbon, total carbon footprint far below what the, you know, your slice of the 38 million metric ton portfolio would be. So in the written description in the IRP, the CPC asks load serving entities not only to model these two portfolios, but also to discuss which one is their preferred portfolio. Given that DCE's goals are, you know, of course, to be very green, and to increase the amount of renewables in your portfolio, we indicate in the narrative that the 38 MMT portfolio is the preferred portfolio with the goal of hitting 100% renewable content from non-emitting renewable technology types by 2030. Moving on to the next slide, you know, what does that mean in terms of what's actually in DCE's portfolio? So there's two slides here. First, looking at the energy supply of DCE's portfolio, i.e. what energy, where is the energy coming from to meet your load every hour of the day? And then the next slide talks about, you know, what resources are in your portfolio to ensure that you can help the system meet reliability and, you know, do DCE's fair share to avoid rolling blackouts or, you know, any other type of blackout. So for the 2030, when you hit to 2030, we have our two portfolios, the 38 MMT on the left and the 46 MMT on the right. And the technologies that you see are large hydro, solar, wind, small hydro, geothermal, and then system power. The system power occurs when, you know, DCE's resources in its portfolio aren't necessarily generating. So you're purchasing power from the system in other hours of the day. DCE's power plants produce more electricity than you need, so you're selling power. And this just kind of shows on an hour-by-hour basis. If you sum everything up, you know, for each year, what does your energy supply look like? So a few things to note with this. One, you can see in both cases that while DCE is securing a fair amount of large hydro in the first few years of the 2020s, it decreases to zero by the time you get to 2030. That's due to the fact that DCE is instead procuring more and more renewables and adding them to its portfolio. You can see that, you know, noting that DCE is in a very solar heavy area of the country, you know, you have a pretty large share of solar within your portfolio, and even more so in the 38 MMT portfolio where you're trying to meet, you know, you're trying to meet your carbon-free product with 100% renewables. You have a decent share of wind and a small amount of small hydro. That's just because, you know, there isn't a lot of small hydro out there. It doesn't generate a ton, but we did want to have as much as we could in your portfolio. And then in both cases, you have a little bit of geothermal join the portfolio in the late 2020s. That's to allow for that Desert Saver product to have geothermal in the portfolio. And then in both cases, you are leaning on the system to some extent in, throughout the time period to meet your needs, but much less so as you get closer and closer to 2030 in the lower emissions portfolio, because again, that's where you are, you know, trying to come in as low as you can in terms of emissions and not trying to hit the exact target that the CPC has set for the 46 MMP portfolio. Moving on to the next slide, which is the last slide I have for you. So this is looking at the portfolios again, just in a slightly different look. So this is the capacity supply. So rather than, you know, what is being generated on an hour by hour basis to meet DC loads, now we're looking at what resources do you have in your portfolio? What steel do you have in your ground, so to speak, that is there to help DCE meet its peak needs? So Jacqueline, as I said, yes?
I'm sorry to interrupt. Did you mean to advance the slide? There you go.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Might be a little jumpy. So we're on the last slide. It should say capacity supply at the top. So these are the resources available to meet your peak needs. So a big thing to call out here is that you'll note that they're still green, but that is no longer system power. Instead, that those are batteries, 4-hour batteries. So those are batteries that can discharge for 4 hours at a time. As well as in both portfolios, you have a small sliver of 8-hour batteries. So batteries that discharge at a set point for 8 hours. Those are called often long duration batteries. And so system power doesn't show up anymore because we aren't talking about where you're getting energy to meet your load in any particular hour, 3 a.m. or any other time, but we're talking about what resources are in DC's portfolio over this time period. Batteries didn't show up on the previous slide because batteries don't generate energy. They only take on energy and then release it back to the grid at a different time to allow for matching the load and the supply better. Those batteries didn't show up at all in terms of energy supply, but as you can see here, they're a large portion of the capacity of resources that are in your portfolio. That's, as I mentioned earlier, you have a large amount of solar in your portfolio, but if we had only solar with no storage paired with it, then you would have far more solar generation occurring in the middle part of the day than DCE needs, and then much less generation occurring in those evening hours where the system as a whole really needs that power. And so you'd be leaning on the system. With the batteries in your portfolio, you can take up that solar supply from the middle part of the day and release it in the evening hours when DCE as well as the system as a whole needs it. As Katie was mentioning, there is the potential for rolling blackouts today from 3 to 10 p.m. across the entire system. And so, as mentioned, that's the time period when the system as a whole really needs it. And the IRP's goals is to ensure that by the time we get to 2030, we aren't having these sort of issues and that, hopefully that we have enough capacity on the grid to really meet that peak demand in the late afternoon and early evening hours. So that's all I have for slides. I know I covered a lot of material, so glad to take questions from the board at this time.
Thank you, Jacqueline. Appreciate your hard work on the IRP. Board member questions?
I do, John. Did you want to go first, Lisa, or? Okay. So, Jacqueline, that was great. Thank you. I hope there's not a quiz at the end, because give me an F. But I got the gist of it. I do want to ask you a little bit from a bigger picture standpoint. You mentioned, energy supply and reliability. And, of course, this whole exercise is about how DC plans to meet the electric needs of its customers. We have learned and we have heard in the last few days that renewable energy, as desirable as it obviously is, creates an added burden or challenge when we have these types of high demand situations with regards to the supply and reliability of energy. So because that renewable energy is a goal for DCE, does that place us in a precarious position? And if so, does DCE need to adopt some kind of a contingency plan for events like we've been experiencing the last few days?
That's a really great question. So there's a few ways to tackle this. First off, I'd say the state as a whole is grappling with this problem. This isn't just a DCE problem, this is a California state problem. So as we look to going more and more renewable focused, we are going to need technology types on the grid to allow us to shift that renewable energy to when we need it so that we aren't dealing with rolling blackouts. So that's why, as you see on the slide that's currently being shared, there is such a large portion of your portfolio represented by 4-hour batteries and then also a little bit of 8-hour batteries. So those batteries, all their job is to do is to take that solar energy and that wind energy and shift it to from when it was generated to a time when the grid needs it more. And this is something that DCE needs to do, all other load serving entities will need to do as well. And we'll really need to tackle this as a state, thinking about 4-hour batteries, longer duration batteries, potentially other technology types, to ensure that we can go to this greener future without hurting reliability. With this IRP, one critical goal, both due to the CPUC's mandates as well as DCE's own internal objectives, was to ensure that DCE is not leaning on the system for reliability. So DCE in this modeled portfolio that we're showing is doing its fair share. Yes, it's taking on more renewables than perhaps other LSEs, but it's also providing more battery storage than perhaps other LSEs to compensate for that solar. So the goal of this portfolio was to show how DCE can come to a 100% renewable for the carbon-free product by 2030 without leaning on the system. And it's tricky, and it's also it's not cheap. It's I think we have found a way that we can thread that needle and keep it economic, but it's going to be a challenge. Definitely a very goal.
So maybe. In terms of what DC can do, maybe we need to consider in the future, because we've always talked about reinvesting in the community, maybe we can look at the advisability of incentivizing the purchase of batteries by the customers, the DC customers. Maybe that can be some form of a cost-sharing program, because the batteries, I assume, are going to be up to the ratepayers to purchase. They're not going to be provided by the state. So, that's maybe a subject for future discussion. A related question that I have can help me understand. The governor has responded to the situation in the immediate sense by issuing one more executive order. In this case, it has to do with freeing up energy capacity. Can you help us, at least me, understand what exactly that means? And if he can free up energy capacity to avoid rolling blackouts, why couldn't the utilities do that directly, initially, and independently?
So the governor doesn't have many tools in his toolbox, unfortunately, to solve the immediate problem that we have now. I have only skimmed the executive order that you're referencing, and it strikes me as a reasonable order. I'm not sure how effective it is going to be or how much different, with or without that executive order, all of the various agencies responsible for the grid, how that executive order is necessarily changing what everyone would be doing. Right now with rolling blackouts, there is an extreme amount of pressure, both from an economic sense, prices are very high, as well as from a regulatory sense. The ISO has authority to basically go to any facility in these sort of circumstances and say, you must turn on. So everyone is doing everything they can to incentivize generators to get on the grid and to start generating at this time so that we don't have blackouts. The governor used the tool that he had in his toolbox. The ISO is the California ISO, independent system operator, is doing, using every single tool they have in their toolbox to solve this problem. And there's going to be a lot of discussion following this heat wave incident of, you know, what failed in the system to allow these blackouts to occur, and how do we make sure it doesn't happen again? A lot of fingers are going to get pointed to each other, to everyone else as well. I think we've been here in the past to talk to you about the resource adequacy framework in California. That framework is meant to ensure in the short term, for, you know, next month to the next 2 to 3 years, there's enough resources available to supply power to meet the grid's needs. That program started a little less than 10 years ago. It's being held together by duct tape and sticking and like chewing gum. It's been slowly sort of challenged by the structure that California is taking in terms of adding more renewables to the grid. And the program really hasn't adapted appropriately. And unfortunately, the result of that is that we're in the situation that we're in today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Savvy. Lisa, you had a question?
Sorry, Lisa, I think you're muted.
I hear you.
I'm good, no questions.
Okay, thank you very much. I do have one question, Jacqueline. This might also be a question for Katie as well. But in the executive summary of the actual IRP itself, where it talks about the member priorities, it talks about the third priority is listed as adopting procurement guidelines for improving service to and providing economic development opportunities for local disadvantaged communities. And I wanted to talk about that because I believe, and Savvy may be able to help me with this, that we've adopted more general guidelines and not more specific guidelines and implementation protocols for how we want to achieve these guidelines. So around procurement and around impact on our local communities and how we do local hire and like that. So can somebody talk to me about how we get to that point once we adopt this plan and how those implementation techniques would be prepared and addressed?
Katie, did you want to take a first stab at that? And then I'll
go ahead and I'll follow up.
Okay. So the IRP is, you know, one of the focuses of the CPC. You know, I've mentioned the two main ones of greenhouse gas reduction as well as reliability. There's a lot of other focuses, and one of them is equity and equality amongst communities. And so that's where the disadvantaged community goals are partially stemming from. So the IRP requires for LSEs to consider this in their planning and to ensure that they are not just planning to meet, you know, reducing greenhouse gases as well as ensuring reliability, but to be doing so in an equitable manner amongst their communities. So the, you know, this pairs very well with DCE's overall goals of, you know, bringing not only renewable technologies onto the grid, but doing so in a way that helps DCE residents and serves the local community. So this would be things like procuring, you know, local renewables, as we are doing with the local RFP or the renewable RFP that is procuring resources within Palm Springs, within the larger Riverside County, as well as within Southern California as a whole. And then in terms of the next steps there, you know, this kind of goes back to some of the items that Savvy mentioned of thinking, you know, we've got these big resources in our portfolio. How do we also bring in resources within the community? So,
right.
You know, one way that many CCAs are thinking about it is, you know, that solar plus storage. It provides resiliency benefits to local community, you know, either their residences or commercial buildings or, you know, government sites. And so that provides both, you know, the renewable aspect as well as the help for the local communities and building up that infrastructure within the community and the jobs that go along with it.
Okay, I look forward to that. Katie, do you have anything you'd like to add?
I'm pleased that you brought this up, and as the integrated resource plan indicates, Mayor Aguilar, one of our goals is to bring some of these issues forward to the board in the coming months. And certainly with respect to disadvantaged communities, you've already taken a strong stand in working with the Care Fair program, and our outreach that we talked about last time to grid alternatives would fall into that category. But we do want to start to bring those issues forward to you to talk about ways in which you may want to do other things that really focus not just on local resources, but on promoting local jobs and investment in the community and the kinds of programs that other community choice agencies are offering. You know, we definitely have some time. We need to establish our financial reserves and get our financial footing in place. But in that same time frame, we can start talking about the kinds of priorities you would like to see us focus on. And as you mentioned, Councilmember Jonathan, the potential for a storage incentive might be one that we could take a look at. And so we really do look forward to having that conversation with the board.
Excellent. Thank you. We look forward to it as well.
A brief comment, sure. John, just, you know, what you just said, Katie, I think bears a little bit of repetition, and that is that our primary goal right now is to build up the reserves. We really need to create sustainability for DCE mm-hmm. before we can tackle any of these other projects in a meaningful way. So I didn't mean to imply that, you know, hey, we need to do something now. I was just kind of saying it's appropriate to start thinking about it. This has been a bit of a clarion, a bit of a wake-up call, and you know, it's a long-term project, and it's just maybe interesting to start thinking about it. But I agree with the point you make, Katie, which is right now our priority is to build up that reserve so that we do create sustainability for DC for the long-term future.
Yep. And there's time involved in putting together any kind of incentive program. So it's, I think we could, like you mentioned, we can start giving some thought to that and moving along as we do once we get that financial footing in place. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, board members. Seeing no other questions on this item, there is a resolution approving the integrated resource plan. May I have a motion, please?
So moved.
Second.
Great. Can we have a roll call vote, please?
Certainly. Cathedral City?
Yes.
Palm Desert?
Aye.
And Palm Springs?
Aye.
And we have a unanimous decision.
Great. Thank you. Jacqueline, thank you very much for your work on this. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome. It was a big team effort.
Thanks. Thanks again. Okay, let's move on then, if we can, to the item B, which is our legislative update. Katie, did you have any comments on the, I know this shows as an information item only, but did you have any supplemental comments?
Yes, Mr. Chair, this is an information item. Just to give you an idea, we do want to continue to provide this, and in particular in our membership with CalCCA, they are helping us with a lot of this information. I mentioned briefly the power cost and difference adjustment. You'll be hearing more about that going forward. There's still some uncertainty about where that's going to end up, but it will have an effect on us. And the other items are really just some updates. The bill update provides a couple of bills that the CalCCA has been tracking and some basic information. Of course, the legislative session is pretty much coming to a close. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer those. Otherwise, it is an information item.
Okay, thank you. I see no questions on this item. So let's then move on to the next item, which is actually information items. We have three of the items that are included. Our attendance record, our update to our launch and related activities, and then our unaudited financial reports. Are there any board member comments on these items, questions? Seeing none, do we have any public comments on these non-agenda items, on the information items?
We see no hands raised.
Okay, I appreciate, well, that takes us then to the our conclusion. Thank you, everybody. Appreciate your time. Our next meeting is scheduled for September 21st at this time, also a Zoom meeting. So unless there are other questions or comments, I will adjourn the meeting. Everybody stay safe and be careful. Good seeing you.
Good seeing you all.
Take care, everybody.
Thank you.